So again, choose two of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Rearrange the letters, and you will get a class of people who might be discriminated against and a word that connects people. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of January 13th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wonders what the next disaster will be.
The fires in L.A. won't stop. Yeah, the wind, but more critically, the drought. L.A. already has severe housing problems, and the fire season's months away. Add to that, our next president blaming the current mayor and governor for not putting the fires out, implying if he was in charge, poof, the fires would be gone. That's the compassionate, rational leadership we can expect the next 4 years. How many warnings does Gaia need to send us? The world keeps getting hotter, drier in places, flooding in others, coastlines rising. What are we to do? What better for the environment than war? Another billion people, oceans the wrong temperature and chemistry, air shortening lifespans, folks spending so much time playing with artificial intelligence, nuclear power plants are making a comeback. I might need freezing rain and a power outage to get me back to the here and now, but I need to climb back into the light. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 15th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Dan Raphael. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I'm Luna Winchester. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KB News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, to talk about his latest story. It's called Zenith Energy Positioning Itself as Region's Preeminent Renewable Fuels Hub. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hi, Althea. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. So you've been covering the saga with Zenith Energy in Portland for a while now, and it is not over by any means. Lots to talk about here. So let's go through the timeline of Zenith's legal trouble with the city and state. Why don't we start in 2021? That's when the city of Portland denied Zenith's land use compatibility statement, or LUX. Why was that initially denied?
The city said that Zenith's plans did not align with the city's 2035 comprehensive plan, and it did not take into account tribal nations and their interests in the matter at all. And so they denied the Lux. Zenith sued the city, and for that over that denial, it went to the Land Use Board of Appeals. It went to the Oregon Supreme Court, actually. And by July 2022, Zenith gave a kind of secret tour of its facilities. Some city councilors, Street Roots, broke that story in 2023 after obtaining some public records that showed what advocates call a backroom deal. Just after that, in October 3rd, 2022, the city granted this brand new land use compatibility statement with no public involvement at all. The city auditor later determined in March of last year that Zenith actually broke city lobbying code in pursuit of that land use statement. And then on November 14th, DEQ actually conducted a site visit after they heard some new information from advocates in a public meeting. And they found that Zenith had constructed new pipes and used them for 3 years. That meaning back to 2021, before the city granted this new land use statement. And I'm kind of jumping timeline here, but just to be clear about that. And then on December 6th, DEQ announced that they had fined Zenith $372,000 and requested a new land use statement from the city of Portland that Zenith has to give to DEQ by February 4th. So time is ticking. Advocates sort of fear that there's another backroom deal going on because it's still pretty difficult to get real public open information from the city. And so Street Roots started filing some public records requests and kind of digging through here to see what we could find out.
Well, with that, with these public records that you've been able to obtain, talk me through the series of events from December that you were able to get from these public records.
So one of the attachments here in an email that Grady Reamer, the chief commercial officer for Zenith, sent to Donnie Oliveira, he's the deputy city administrator, there was an 11-page attachment. It's just called an update on Zenith's transition since it obtained its 2022 land use statement. It also shows that Zenith is really looking to expand and become, and it's underlined here, the renewable fuels hub for the entire West Coast. They want to expand their operations. There is a condition of their current land use statement that says that they have to transition to renewable fuels within 5 years. Advocates say that may not be possible, for one, and secondly, that Zenith may not even totally intend to do it because they rarely face consequences for breaking any of these laws. So it shows that they want to, import from Singapore and from the Midwest, from like Montana, and then they want to export. They want to bring it all through here, store it right here on the Willamette River at the critical energy infrastructure hub next to Forest Park. And then they want to export that to Northern California and to Southern California and up to Vancouver, BC. They also want to add sustainable aviation fuel and provide that to the Portland Airport. That's something that the Port of Portland has basically said that they're interested in doing as part of a renewable fuels transition. And Zenith wants to be the primary provider of sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF, as people call it.
Part of Zenith's new plan is to include sustainable aviation fuel. Can you talk to me about what that means exactly? Is that a climate solution that environmental advocates have been looking for?
Well, some. The real appeal here of sustainable aviation fuel, advocates call it SAF, the real appeal is that it's a drop-in technology, so it can just replace fossil fuel-based jet fuel right away on any given flight. There's a lot of questions about where the feedstocks come from and, you know, how much kind of carbon emissions there are on the front end. But at least on the back end, for one single flight, if you're using sustainable aviation fuel, it can cut CO2 emissions. That's important because aviation accounts for roughly 2-3% of global carbon emissions, and commercial passenger flights are the largest contributors. So SAF has to be blended with conventional jet fuel. You can blend 30 to 70% and still keep an airplane in the air. So if you had a 50-50 blend and the SAF was emitting half of conventional fuels, you would be reducing a single flight's emissions by 25%. Again, you have to consider all of the upstream carbon emissions before you can really see what that means in reality when it comes to putting carbon into the atmosphere. So it is sort of a solution, but again, with the accessibility of commercial flights, flights are expected to increase over time. And so the more flights there are, regardless of if it's SAF or if it's conventional jet fuel, we need to stop putting carbon into the air if we want to avoid catastrophic climate change, which, you know, by many accounts, we're already past that point.
What is the solution that advocates are asking for when it comes to Zenith?
There are a lot of ideas around. I mean, liquid fuels is one of the big issues here. Just like depending on liquid fuels hurts certain people first and worse. You know, these are brought through oil by rail, impacting people in those neighborhoods. The explosions of these fuels could be, you know, really calamitous consequences. And so there are ideas. There are plenty of things. You know, you're not going to power an airplane with wind turbines, and there are no electric airplanes. But there are ideas around for, you know, not using liquid fuels in, you know, your house with like methane gas, or, you know, in cars, fossil fuels, traditional fossil fuels. So there are a number of options, but one of the main things that people are concerned about is that there's a full attention to a just transition off of fossil fuels and these liquid fuels, so that the people who are most impacted by this stuff now have a say in this process.
Also worth noting in this timeline, right, in December, from an earlier story, so not this most recent one that you published, you found that the city attorney was trying to invoke attorney-client privilege. This is related to the DEQ fine, which obviously looks bad for Zenith and requires a new process to go back through the city, that actually was about political strategy between the city and Zenith. Can you talk us through that part a little bit?
There was a series of emails around the city administrators and some others, bureau staff, who are going to be giving a briefing to then Mayor-elect Keith Wilson about Zenith Energy. And Lauren King, the deputy city attorney, encouraged officials in an email to include someone from the city attorney's office in their communications regarding Zenith, saying that the inclusion of that office would, quote, keep the discussion privileged. I'll read the full quote of the email because I think it's interesting. It says, "I understand this is a small piece of your agenda, but I would strongly encourage you to include someone from our office." She wrote this on December 3rd, just 3 days before DEQ fined Zenith. And then she said, "There's a lot of legal as well as political strategy into how this next step is handled. If nothing else, having us there will at least keep the discussion privileged." And kind of in those records, it was some 620 some pages that I got back. But in the middle of, you know, that week or so, there were a number of redactions that were related to the city attorney's office. And, you know, I appealed that to the Multnomah County DA, and the city, you know, to their credit, ended up just furnishing the records, giving them to me, saying that it was in the public interest. But, you know, really protecting a political strategy is not a basis for redacting public records. That's actually quite the opposite of transparency. And so it was a very interesting thing to come across.
So Zenith's new plan, also from public records, would be to become the preeminent renewable fuels hub on the West Coast, to grow even larger. What did the records say about just how big they want to get?
I mean, they, again, it's like underlined in the thing. They want to be the renewable fuels hub in the West. That includes, you know, importing, you know, feedstocks and sustainable aviation fuels, renewable fuels from Singapore, from the Midwest. And then, you know, they have an oil by rail operation. They can store all of this at the river. And then they want to send it to Eugene, kind of all over the state. They say they could be the renewable fuels provider for the state. And then again, to the airport, using the Kinder Morgan pipeline, which is a 8.4-mile pipeline that goes basically from the energy infrastructure hub to the Portland airport. So again, you know, it's worth noting, like, the renewables transition, of course, there are some carbon emissions benefits to transitioning to renewable fuels. But as far as the increase in throughput and the sort of toxic nature of these fuels being right in the middle of the city is something that is really concerning to environmental advocates.
I was going to ask if the proposed switch to renewables has soothed any of the advocates that have been pushing against Zenith for so long.
No, for a company who has violated the law so many times, you know, local advocacy group Columbia Riverkeeper has tracked, I think, 18 violations since Zenith came here in 2014. You know, it's sort of a fool me once kind of thing with the city, where they've repeatedly lied about their practices. They've promised that they were going to decrease their throughput, and then they have actually, you know, reported to DEQ an increase in their throughput of fossil fuels as long as they've been here. They've never reduced the throughput. So they're really, you know, for environmental advocates, it's, first of all, it's not a trustworthy company. Fossil fuel companies are, secondly, most interested in creating revenue for shareholders. That's what they do. And fossil fuel companies in general, this isn't specific to Zenith, but fossil fuel companies have been lying about climate change and their impacts and their contributions to climate change for 50 years. So the advocates really call this much more of a greenwashing campaign than something that is going to effectively, materially reduce carbon emissions, which is the thing, of course, that we see contributing to things like the LA wildfires that are going on right at the same time as this battle in Portland.
And it doesn't address the major risks to the surrounding community if there were to be a natural disaster like the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake, or even things like a train derailment or a lightning strike.
Sure. This is very centered in, you know, on the Willamette River at the infrastructure hub and the toxic fumes. I talked to Nancy Heiser, who lives in the Winton neighborhood right there, and she said she can smell the fumes all the time. It's not just from Zenith, but it's, you know, from the whole collection of tanks there. The trains come through low-income and BIPOC neighborhoods all over the city, and those have negative impacts on people's health. That's why, in part, the county is involved in this as the public health agency. And, you know, it has really devastating impacts beyond, you know, kind of the worst-case scenario, which would be that earthquake. It's an inevitable earthquake that on the Cascadia subduction zone that could have calamitous consequences.
Well, I want to go back to the public records that you got after the DEQ fine. So the DEQ fined Zenith on December 6th for, as you write, illegally constructing and operating a pipeline over 3 years on adjacent tax lots. So they were not permitted to be constructing and operating there. And from Grady Reamer, in an email from him, the chief commercial officer at Zenith, he writes, quote, "It's a shame we are revisiting this Lux issue over a technicality. As an FYI, if not all, then most of the terminals in the CEI hub are pipeline connected to one another and likely do not have all tax lots issued on their own Lux. This interpretation has a much larger impact than just Zenith." So, I mean, we talk a lot about Zenith, but the CEI hub in general might be implicated in this.
That was a very interesting thing to find in these public records. I didn't really expect the chief commercial officer of Zenith to be outing all of his fossil fuel friends and neighbors for also violating state law. But there it is. And it shows another thing that I think doesn't necessarily, isn't so explicit in this story, which is it also shows how comfortable Zenith appears to be with city administrators and city bureaus who are helping to facilitate this for them on an expedited timeline. Advocates say like out of public view, and from my perspective, I try to get information from the city too, and it's like getting blood from a stone to get real, direct, adequate, like accurate information. But he seems cozy enough with, he emailed Donnie Oliveira, who's the deputy city administrator, and said that and didn't seem to have the sense that there would be any consequences for that, despite the fact that he's saying that Zenith and every other person there right in the city limits are violating not only state law, but quite possibly Portland City Code.
Off of that, where does it sound like the city of Portland is landing on this issue, giving a new lux to Zenith for this major expansion?
It's a little hard to say. I think they are under significant public pressure right now. The question is whether or not they're going to listen to the public about this issue that people have, cared a lot about for a long time. The city can give information about what Zenith is up to at any time. They could choose to do that. There's not some sort of national security threat here, or there's really nothing going on. And so the fact that so many people are asking so many generally sort of easy questions for the city to answer, and then kind of holding back from that, the fact that we found this 11-page plan through a public records request rather than just, maybe a public presentation at City Hall or whatever, kind of shows that they would really like to ram this through. And a lot of advocates were concerned that they were going to try to ram it through before the end of the year, before the new city council was sworn in. And that did not happen. So I don't know. I'm not sure if the public pressure is just playing a different role or if they're starting to change their minds about it, but we'll see within the next 2.5 weeks.
One thing I wanted to ask is if there will be a public process on this new lux, right? The original one was denied because of years of advocate work and public pressure, say no to Zenith, putting in these climate protections into the city goals. And, it's also worth noting it was a campaign issue that a lot of our current city council members ran on, was that they weren't going to support Zenith in the way that their predecessors maybe had.
There is a work session scheduled for January 21st at 9:30 a.m. And those are public meetings, and the public can actually attend those sessions online or in person. So there is some amount of that. That's maybe the first bit of public process for this land use statement that they need to provide to DEQ by the 4th. Still, the city continues to argue that this is just an administrative decision and that the city council doesn't have anything to do with it. I think there are probably certain mechanisms for making this a council decision that I'm sure a lot of people are considering. But you're right. Some half of the city council is opposed to this, and or at least wants to have a public process around it to make sure that they know what they're buying. And, on the other side of that, 27 council candidates, people just, who may not have even won their races, signed a letter asking DEQ to hold off so that the new city council could take a look at it. So there's a very different, with the exception of Dan Ryan, who was in charge of the Bureau when the 2022 land use statement was issued, there's a whole new council here who might view things a little bit differently.
One other aspect we didn't mention earlier when talking about this timeline, right? October 3rd is when the new conditional lux was issued by the city of Portland. And this is while this ongoing legal battle was happening. And just 3 days later, the Oregon Supreme Court upheld an earlier decision by a lower court that said Portland did have the right to deny the permit to Zenith. So doesn't that court decision still stand? So Portland could very easily deny the new lux? It's not this totally foreign process that nobody's ever tried before?
Right. I think that, yeah, there were a few things. The Land Use Board of Appeals said that this is a quasi-judicial system, meaning that it would be taken up by elected officials in the public. And then the Supreme Court, again, the Oregon Supreme Court, said that they did have the right to deny it. And everyone, you know, at DEQ, the EQC, which kind of sets the administrative rules for DEQ, they all say, we can't touch this. This is a city decision only. And then that Supreme Court decision saying that the city has the right to do it really shows that the only reason to not, that this has not been denied at this point, considering all of the violations, some of which were, you know, before the city took a tour with Zenas to see their whole new plan, kind of secretly what advocates call the backroom deals. You know, all of these kind of violations, the only reason that the city would not just deny this right away is if they don't want to.
What are some of the key takeaways that you hope folks get from this story?
When it comes to climate change, there may be all sorts of ideas about how to move forward with regard to fossil fuels and renewable fuels. Having fossil fuel companies dictate what a city does and having a city sort of believe fossil fuel companies who have been lying about climate change for 50 years doesn't seem like very good public policy, and it certainly isn't a great way to address climate change. The impacts of fossil fuels and even of these renewable fuels, there's not necessarily such a big reduction in these renewable fuels, particularly if these companies are able to increase their throughput and to be able to continue pushing fossil fuels. Sustainable fuels, renewable fuels still have carbon emissions. It still continues to impact the environment negatively. And for environmental advocates, that's a central piece of it. The climate change is real. It's happening all around us all the time. And that's the main, their main purpose is to get CO2 out of the atmosphere.
If our listeners are interested in finding this piece for themselves, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way to get Street Roots is to buy a copy from a vendor. They really appreciate your support. They accept cash, Venmo, and tips. You can also find us at streetroots.org.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up? It was a lot to cover.
It's a lot to cover. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Jeremiah. I appreciate it. That was Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, speaking with me about his latest story. It's called Zenith Energy Positioning Itself as Region's Preeminent Renewable Fuels Hub. More information is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. Thank you.
Greetings. I'm Ansa Krigland.
And I'm Winston Watson.
And I'm Donna Clark.
And we are The Meditation.
We are listening to Community Radio.
KBOO
90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Dig it.
Radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO